Blog Talk Radio.
Sun's on my back, wind's in my ear. I haven't felt this good in years. See all the people in the field all lined up in a row. We got a couple more long hours of work before it's time to go. We're all working.
Hello and welcome to Those Darn Guys Who Happen to Be Therapists, and I emphasize the word darn. My name is Dr. Jim Weaver, and I'm a psychologist, and I'm here with psychotherapist Hughes Kraft and couples therapist Dr. David Sanford, and we will be boldly going out on the podosphere once again where no therapists have gone before, or, failing that, hopefully, putting the fun back in dysfunctional and bringing some insights into the issues of love, life, and the search for a decent relationship. And we will be joined once again toward the end of the show by psychologist Dr. Mark Kiefner, clinical director of Bayside Neurorehabilitation Services, with some cutting-edge research on the brain called A Minute on the Mind. Good morning, guys.
Good morning.
Good morning.
All right. So our topic today is me versus we. How do you blend that individuation and that a togetherness to have a functional relationship? So who wants to start with that today?
I can jump in with that. You know, you're leading to the show, Jim. You know, with the putting the fun back into dysfunction. I think you know this is the effort right here. You know, with this issue. You know, I guess I just want to start by maybe putting out a scenario. You know, a couple. We'll get together and, you know, they're connected at the hip in those early moments of blissful union, inseparable. They even start to look alike in some ways, you know. And gradually over time, things kind of move in different directions and maybe people kind of get pulled in different areas of interest or hobbies or career demands, whatever. But you start to hear those comments like, we never have anything in common anymore. Or what do we have that's similar? Why would we never get together and have any fun together anymore? Mm-hmm. And I'm just wondering what that separation is about. Is it about falling out of love? Is it about a process of individuation? Is it a process of the truth is they never really did have anything in common when they first got together?
Right.
I'm just trying to you know kind of put a little frame around this to kind of get some feedback from you guys around what you know is that something that you've kind of seen with some of your work and some of your clients coming in, couples coming in.
Right. I think that you know when you fall in love, it's very intoxicating, and you want to join with the other person. And that's a deep drive in all of us to want to join to something more than ourselves. You know, I think that's the driving force with a lot of religion in terms of being connected to something beyond ourselves. And so that's a very strong drive. But then as that intoxication goes away, you start to notice the differences between the two of you. And for some people, they really were blinded by all this, and like you say, Hughes, there's not a lot of common interest. You know, I think the relationships that work better or have a smoother transition anyway have a lot of things in common, and they enjoy doing stuff together, and their individual needs mesh with their togetherness needs. The problem comes in when they don't mesh. So I think that's where you have to do some work. Or it's most of the time it's a combination of both. There's some needs and some interests that mesh and some that don't. How much time do you have for yourself and your own individual needs? How much time does your partner put into getting interested in what you're interested in? And how much time do you say, well, I'm only going to devote so much time to that particular interest and my I'll devote other time to togetherness stuff or my partner's interests.
I think the problem is almost inevitably going to arise unless, pretty much from the beginning, the couple understands that it's almost like there are three entities present. There's I, there's you, and there's we.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem is this problem of going separate ways, so to speak, and decreasing the sharing between two people is least likely to happen if both people realize that the we aspect of the relationship has got to be nurtured all the way along. And the problem is inevitably going to arise if the we is not. And that doesn't mean that we have to be symbiotically linked to each other. That it doesn't mean that we can't have separate lives, but it means that we have to refer our different experiences and our different interests back to the we part of the relationship.
Mm-hmm. I think
one of the...
just warming up. To say that one of the ones I think of that comes up a lot is the whole football widow kind of thing. You know, the guy is really interested in football. She's not. So she becomes a football widow. And the question is, you know, how much football is enough? Or is she going to get interested in football? Or is she going to find a way to interface with that? Sometimes I think, women deal with that by, if he's going to watch football, there's like a little football party, and it turns into a dinner and so forth. So they work at, their interests kind of mesh with that. She's not interested in football, but she is interested in having people over, and she can play a part in that. Sometimes that works for people, sometimes it doesn't. Depends on what her individual proclivities are. So
in other words, if we're giving tips, so as part of all of this, the tip that I'm hearing from you is that if two people care about the we part of the relationship, then they need to find some way with reference to the football example, they need to find some way to expand the experience, as with the addition of a meal maybe, that the partner who's not interested in football can become part of the whole mix, right?
Yeah, right.
Is that a tip?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, that can feel like a lot of pressure on a relationship to me, though. I mean, but if the woman has no interest in football, no interest in having dinner with the people afterwards who come to the party, I mean...
I'm not suggesting that's a solution for everybody. One of the solutions is you watch your football and I'm going to go shopping with my friends or whatever. The problem would come in terms of he wants to watch Sunday football, Saturday football, Monday night football, Thursday night football. He's sort of obsessive about that individuation.
Well, that only needs Tuesday and Wednesday night for recovery from those football games. That's a lot of stuff.
Right. Yeah.
Does this make sense? Does it make sense to say that although she, or it could be he, is not interested in football, the one who is not interested is interested in the other partner who is interested in football? I mean, that's getting to be awfully wordy.
Yeah,
but I may not be interested in football, but I care about you, and I'm curious about your interest in it, you know?
Right.
In other words, an element in a healthy relationship needs to be curiosity. I'm curious
right.
about our differences. I want to know you better in terms of this fascination that you have with football that I don't share at all.
Right.
So season one, that question's asked and the curiosity is understood. And then what do you do for the subsequent seasons? Right. There still needs to be a little bit of balance for the relationship somehow, right?
I can say without fear of overstating the case, that Stephanie was deathly afraid of my interest in baseball. And she did a really good, she had really made a really good effort to get interested in some aspects of it. And I think I did a good job, you'll have to ask her, but I think I did a good job in terms of, you know, backing off from too much involvement in baseball. And she recognized when it was really important, like when the Red Sox were going for the World Series, and she actually got interested in it when she could have some reassurance that it wasn't going to be all-encompassing. You know, that this was special, this was important, this was focused in a brief period of time of watching baseball every other day. I really appreciated that. I think she appreciated my, you know, saying I'll watch these important games,
right,
but not everything. And I think it worked out well.
Your example is an example of relationship generosity.
Yes.
The fact that you were generous and that you kind of moderated your interest in baseball and she made room for it and got interested in it to some degree. You were generous with each other, and each time that occurred, it perhaps the other person was grateful for the generosity.
Right.
You know, so there's this absolutely essential element of a relationship that aims to work, and that is a generosity and appreciation.
Yep.
I think part of that can be activated through an invitation. I think that's part of what you're saying through the generosity is extending an invitation to our significant other, partner, to, hey, come, let me show you what's important to me about this. Let me teach you
right.
The thrilling aspects of the World Series. You know, it's kind of offered as an invitation.
Right.
Yeah, I agree completely.
Yeah, that kind of goes back to our previous show. We were talking about intimacy. You know, it's kind of like, all right, intimacy. You know, this is what's important to me. So come along for a little bit. I'm not asking you to live here, but I am asking you to mm-hmm. understand what's important to me and to recognize and witness.
Right.
It occurs to me that any time we sort of dip into a topic, very quickly, related topics that probably we can't get to sort of arise.
Right.
And there's a topic here. I just want to note it rather than dig deeply into it. And that topic could be called, What Happened to Us? Meaning we had a we at some point, and we look at each other across the dinner table. Now, let's say the kids are gone. We look at each other across the dinner table, and this just doesn't seem to be little, if any, us still there. What happened? How did it get to be that way, and what could we do to remedy it?
Yeah. I think one of the big reasons or big factors is not paying enough attention to it. You know, it's like a garden. You know, if you don't really weed it and water it and so forth, it's gonna either grow wild or, you know, not be very thriving. And I think it's the same with the relationship. If you do not talk about, as you said, David, the we part of us, the me, we, you, me, and us. If you don't really look at the we part and nurture that as an entity, as something that needs a lot of tending, then you can drift apart, and the relationship cannot be holding together.
Right. Indeed. Indeed.
So is that pulling apart, is that movement towards a separateness that kind of is a mark of relationships, maybe in general, but, you know, is it an act of falling out of love, or is it a process of individuation?
Well, I think, you know, I think both are important. I think you need to say, okay, who am I? What is important to me? What are my interests? And sometimes you may have to do those by yourself. The other partner may not be that interested in it, or you have to go somewhere to pursue it. So you've got to pay attention to that. But you've also got to pay attention to the we and say, okay, how much am I going to be serving my own growth and development? I think when you're in love, you love somebody, you say, I want you to, you know, to realize your potential. I want you to get the things that make you happy. And, you know, again, it's a matter of proportion. It's a matter of balance in terms of, okay, how much of that is okay, how much of that is reasonable, how much of that is going to be detrimental to the we part. You know, again, it's always choices, and there's only so much time in the day or in the week. How do you proportion out that time? But if you're going to be a we, if you're going to have a couple, you got to devote a certain amount of that, and sometimes it takes some just looking at it and talking about it and going back and forth trying to figure out, is it working? Are we spending enough time? Are we feeling close enough? Are we enough? I mean, it works with you, with the three of us, right? How much time do we need to spend together to feel like a real solid we, huh?
There are, as you're talking
no
about
no comments
this,
on that?
Uncalculable. Uncalculable.
Go
you guys
for
are just being individuals.
Absolutely. And I'm going to try to serve your individuation by blocking out whatever I was going to talk about. Because I realize right now. Never mind. Wow. Say it again, would you?
just that the three of us need a certain amount of time focused on this group that we have, these darn guys, to make us a cohesive unit. And, you know, we've put a lot of time together over the years.
Yes, indeed. One of the ways that I approach that challenge of attentiveness to the we, one of the ways that I approach that sometimes working with couples is that I ask them to describe the we of their relationship as if that we was literally a third person.
Mm-hmm.
Who is this person that is the two of us?
Right.
And also, there is a way to be attentive to the we, which to me is similar to, say, the way in which a classical trio is performing a work by Bach or Haydn or whoever it might be. I mean, each person has his or her part. And yet, if they're not attentive to the way the parts are fitting together, if they're not attentive to the larger quality of the music, it's just not going to work.
Right.
So there needs to be a way. I don't think this is particularly easy, but I think it's really important. There needs to be a way to regard a relationship as itself an entity, like two people dancing together or making music together, in which you can shift your attention from what I want or what you want to, you know, what's the quality of the music that we're making together?
Right, right. And sometimes to put in your own, you know, your own take on it so that your, you know, your riff on these things, I mean, it really is very applicable to jazz, that you can individuate and blend, It really is a dance. And when that dance is graceful, then it's beautiful. When it's jerky or discordant, then it's not such a nice thing.
Quite so.
Yeah, and go ahead, Hughes.
No, go ahead, because I'm just going to go somewhere else.
Huh?
I'll jump in. I was just thinking of practical examples. I mean, it is hard. I mean, we're talking in the abstract a little bit here, and you know, I'm just thinking of some examples of it, because it is really hard. This is really a complicated subject, honoring the we when you can't see the we, touch the we. You know, you're just kind of, it's there. It's in between the two. And you were talking about music, Dave. I'm just thinking Well, in practical matters, it may mean my wife likes salsa dancing, and I like, you know, another form of dancing, and we may have to go out and try a third type of dancing. But it's going to involve
right.
some risk. It's going to involve an invitation. It's going to involve a willingness on both our parts to try something new or to honor something that takes a little bit of both sides and blends it into something
right.
that serves us both and serves the week.
Right. You know, I was thinking about expanding this, David, expanding this to families. You know, how much time does it take to have family time or to where the family feels like a really solid unit? I know some families don't have dinner together. I think that's a shame and very necessary most of the time to having a cohesion and a sense of family togetherness. That's a way to say, oh, we're
Absolutely.
All here together. We're a family. There's a time to talk about what's happening with everybody. And back to couples, back and forth. Sometimes I think the couple needs to have, you know, meal times or special times together without the kid. So again, you know, what's the time that needs to be invested to make each
right.
thing work? Yeah.
Right. So here's another topic on the horizon, which is how much do we owe the kids? Is
right.
it legitimate, within a family, is it legitimate to say, look, your mom and I have not had any time together, and although we love your games, you're gonna have to make it through this one without us in the stands, you know, because
right.
we've
right.
decided that we need to go off for a few hours, and that's the way it is.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe put more elegantly than that. You know, clearly, some parents who are so much into the we of family or the needs of the kids would never do that. They just wouldn't do it until, you know, the last kid was 18 or something like that.
Right, right. Sometimes I think that's an unconscious want to escape one-on-one time because things have not gone that smoothly with the couple, or
yeah.
they don't know how to deal with these difficulties. So let's go to the game. That way, you know, if we're totally focused on that, if we're so busy on that, we won't be trapped here trying to, you know, face the partner with kind of dead time.
Quite so, quite so.
Yeah.
And then the kids may very well pick up on that, and they're somehow carrying the burden. They sense that there's something not right in mom and dad's total absorption in them, you know?
Right, right, exactly. Hey, listen, guys, I noticed that Dr. Mark Kiefner has joined us, and let's go to Mark with a minute on the mind. Hello, Dr. Mark Kiefner.
Hi, Jim. Hi, Hughes. Hi, David. How are you guys?
Hi, Mark.
We're doing good.
I can
we're doing
hear
better
that.
Now that you're here. Woof.
No, we were doing well before.
No, David.
You're hurting me, David. You're hurting me.
Yeah. He has that streak in him.
I was thinking about this me-we issue and the role of mirror neurons. Which a lot of therapists don't talk about that much, but the brain actually has neurons that mirror or resonate with other person's states. And,
wow.
And what we do with those is we create representations or little maps in our mind of other people's intentions or what their actions are about. We kind of create a map of what their actions are about. And sometimes we create really bad maps, and which leads to all those kind of disagreements about what the intention was really about. And one of the things that I think is interesting is there's a bunch of interesting research on mindfulness and how it can help you kind of trim some of the emotion from the map, trim some of the history from the map so that you can see things more clearly. Essentially, it sort of disconnects some of the memory from the experience. And then you can kind of look at the other person in a way that allows you to kind of look at their actions without all the histories that might clog up the relationship. Does that make any sense?
Yeah. I think, as we've talked about a number of these techniques, easier said than done, but something certainly to be focused on and figure out ways to do that.
And to stay focused on that, I love the image of trimming the emotional content and just staying focused with the core. And that's a strong image for me, so that makes sense.
And it's interesting that it's wired in some ways.
Well, I think that, I mean, it makes sense evolutionarily that, at least it does to me, that you'd want to be able to predict. You wouldn't want to go through life with complete randomness. And so, you know, if you're the kind of person that's been hurt or you've had a history with someone that leads you to believe they're going to act a certain way, you would tend to predict that again. And so you'd be sensitive to cues coming from them or from the environment, that's going to happen again. And so, but oftentimes that's actually not the case.
Do mirror neurons in a way account for the phenomenon of empathy?
Yes.
You know, of the sense of understanding in a fairly profound way, in a feelingful way, what somebody else is going through?
Yes. Mirror neurons resonate with other people's emotional states. And so, you know, for example, if you see someone who looks sad or you see someone who looks happy, you have neurons that will resonate and create that kind of emotional state in you also. And unfortunately, I think a lot of times in marriages and relationships, we have enough history that we don't that we bypass that mirroring and go directly to judgment. So I think the trick, or one of the tricks, is to sort of stick with the mirroring and see if you can just experience the other person.
Kind of being, as you said, mindful in the present, in the here and now, noticing what you're actually experiencing rather than what you are imagining that you're experiencing or projecting on what you're experiencing.
Yeah, it's interesting. Yeah. It's easier to do with a stranger than it is with the spouse.
Right.
I didn't hear
assuming
that.
Assuming that your spouse isn't a stranger.
Assuming that your spouse is not a
Hey, listen, guys. Great stuff. Thanks, Mark. As always, very interesting to put, bring in those perspectives. So we're winding down here, almost out of time. Great discussion. Good to get together with you guys again. We'll be here again next week with another topic about life, love, and the pursuit of a really good relationship. So. See you guys later.
Have a good week.
Very good.
Okay, and here's Megan Jo Wilson to take us away.
Well, in the evening we get together, long day.